Hello and welcome to All About Symbian Insight number 72. I'm Steve Litchfield, and with me we have...
Rafe Blanford.
And recently released from Lubyanka in Russia.
I wasn't staying at Lubyanka, I was staying on Lubyanka Road. Hi everybody, you and Spencer safely back from the depths of Moscow. Hello.
Yes, and so who won Eurovision then?
Oh, Stuart? Come on, I told you back in March it was going to be Norway, didn't I?
I wasn't really listening at that point.
Oh, well, I got 3-1 at the bookies on Norway winning, so I was quite happy.
I wanted Iceland to win. Anyway.
Iceland came second, and probably, to be honest, that's probably better for Iceland, given how much it costs to put on the contest.
Bankrupted the entire country. Yeah.
Indeed. Russia spent 36 million euros on it. Just, you know. Okay, that's me done.
Okay, moving on with news. We have lots of interesting bits and pieces, a load to get through in the next half an hour or so. First up, though, that comes with music, Nokia 5800. This is the official Nokia SIM-free version. Rafe, what's the price on their store?
This is £300, and the reason this is significant is we're talking about the UK here. It is available in other markets as well. It was available, or is going to be available exclusively on Orange, but you'll have to pay a contract of a fairly hefty amount to get onto that. So if you're on another network or on pay-as-you-go, you'll be able to get a SIM-free 5800 with comes with music for £300. That's about, depending on where you buy it from, between £50 and £80 more expensive than a regular 5800. So £50 to £80 for a year's worth of music, I personally think that's a fantastic deal, especially when you consider with the 5800, you've got quite a bit of storage space in terms of an 8GB memory card in the box, and you can actually download the music on the go wherever you are over 3G or over Wi-Fi, which is much better than on the Series 40 phones where it has to be done via a PC. So I suspect this will do a lot better. I think it's going to do best on contract, obviously, but for canny purchases, if you haven't already bought a 5800 and are thinking about doing so, considering one with comes with music, if you're a music fan, is probably well worthwhile.
Okay, thanks, Rafe. Next news item, Google has announced that their new Google Sync Mobile now supports at 60. Basically, they started off using SyncML with just a contact sync, but obviously were mulling over doing things rather differently, and what with Nokia's Mail for Exchange software coming along, they thought, hang on, we can plug into that and have proper push sync, so whenever you update an item on the phone or on the desktop, on the web, they get synced in both directions automatically without you having to do anything. It's been implemented this way fairly neatly, but there are a load of caveats, and obviously this is quoted as being beta, so do read the instructions and do keep your wits about you and do backups. Rick, have you had a chance to install this yet?
I haven't had a chance to install this yet, mainly because I use a hosted Exchange server, so I don't really have any need for this, but it is interesting to see Google go the Exchange route. I think the reason they've done this is simply because it's a more seamless user experience. With SyncML, at least at the moment, you have to specifically trigger a sync event, whereas with the Exchange, you can sort of schedule it to maybe sync on a time basis, or more likely and I think more usefully, you can set it to have push sync. So between, say, 9 o'clock in the morning and 6 o'clock in the evening, you can have it push out your event. So if you enter stuff either on the device or on the web version, it'll automatically arrive without you having to do anything. And actually, for a consumer, I think that's pretty good. That's something that enterprises have only had before. And now it's available in Google Calendar, which, let's face it, really is a consumer product. So, it's a nice extra to have. But as you say, there are some definite caveats to using that in terms of the difficulty of getting things set up, apart from the implications of having always on push for battery life and that kind of thing.
I was going to say the battery life is starting to scare me on some of these with some of these modern services. What with perhaps Gravity running the background, monitoring Twitter, push email, and now push calendar and contacts. That's an awful lot of computing power and data transferring, and staying in touch with your local cell towers, or if you're roaming, constantly connecting, disconnecting, and data flowing all the time. That's got to have a huge impact on battery life, and I suspect that one of the biggest tips for preserving battery life is not to use any of this stuff. But that's perhaps.
I mean that's true, but I mean battery technology, or rather, I think it's not so much battery technology as the software. Has improved over the years to the point at which, on the E-series devices, having push on all the time, which I do, I've done it with all the recent E-series devices, actually, you know, I'm still getting a day and a half of battery without any problem. It's actually when you start using software that is perhaps less respective of, you know, connections and data that you have more problems. So I can happily leave email and calendar and contacts pushing away all day. If I use, you know, web for a longer session, that has a much more pronounced effect on battery. And, you know, this is the same issue that Apple have had with their, you know, push notification system that they wanted to implement, and that's been a bit delayed. And the reason they're doing push notifications is because that's the way they think is going to be most efficient for their particular OS. Symbian, having been designed with power considerations and battery considerations from the ground up, is actually better than at doing it than most of the other OSs, which is why I think it's less of an impact than you may initially suspect. You know, especially if people are using their phone a lot for web browsing or playing music, you know, anything you do is going to use battery life, and you have to offset that against the convenience of having push.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. There is still the issue of what happens when you're traveling and the and relying on a constant data connection, and the phone is having to make and break different cell tower connections at sometimes quite large distances. I've noticed on train journeys, for example, that I can absolutely kill a battery trying to maintain a data session over a 100-mile train journey with the number of different areas I've passed through. But again, yeah, but
surely part of that, Steve, is the fact that you're sitting inside an almost perfect Faraday cage.
That doesn't help.
And I think actually it's a good point in the sense that, you know, in the future we need to have a look at operating systems being more intelligent. So if they see something that's a particularly battery draining event, do they maybe switch off for half an hour or decrease the frequency with which they're checking to try and preserve battery life? So that kind of intelligence, I think, is something we'll probably see becoming more important in the future.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. Okay, on with news. Ewan, let's bring you in here. You missed an N-Gage game while you're away. I gather you've been catching up. Spore is now available on N-Gage. So what's the deal with this?
I think the first thing to point out, it's not Spore available on N-Gage, it's Spore Origins. Spore is a great big, massive PC game where you start off with a little tiny organism and you have to grow it up into a beast and a creature and then a race and then make it to space and try and get to the black hole at the center of the universe while avoiding the great Grok cyborg life form or something weird like that. Spore Origins is the mobile version, which basically is you just get to move around a little tiny bug inside Primordial Ooze for 20 levels. Anybody who's played or seen Flow on the Sony PSP will know exactly what to expect here, because that's what it is. You steer something around a very big gameplay area, you avoid big things, and you eat little things. The little things give you extra powers, such as a shield, more speed, the ability to attack the big things, and at the end of every third level, you finish a level when you can eat up enough of the little things. At the end of every third level, you're allowed to create new bits to add onto your creature to give you maybe more speed, more offense, more defense. So those of you looking for the great big massive Will Wright game, this isn't it. This is a smaller, almost like a third-party spin-off. It's still programmed by Electronic Arts, though. I have to say, I don't think this is as successful as it could be. The N-Gage version, we've only got four directions on the controller, so you can only get to use them in the game. It's quite stuttery. I reckon it's pulling in about 20 frames a second, but really something like this needs about 25. And because of the size of the screen, and because on top of that, the sort of poor controls, it's very hard to avoid the big creatures. And I got to say, this is slightly disappointing. Spore Origins is available for a number of platforms, especially the iPhone. And that uses the built-in accelerometer, uses a much more dense level design. But the N-Gage version has spun off the sort of mobile Java version, which means it's just not as good. It's nice, it's cute, but it could have been so much more.
Yeah, okay. Well, there'll be a full review up on All About Symbian within a week, I guess. Also on N-Gage news, I've just heard over the interwebs that the N97 has been confirmed as not coming with N-Gage at release, and it's going to be applied as in the first firmware update, which I guess is no surprises for anyone. Any comments, guys?
The screen size alone was going to cause problems. Most of these games are set at 320, 240, so your choice was either to scale the screen up, which will take up CPU time, and I'm not sure the N97 has that, or to run it with black borders on the side of the screen like some CinemaScope version on an old 1970s Grundig television. So, to be honest, I think that's a good call. N-Gage really didn't make the jump successfully to the E75, so to put it on the N97 with even more problems in differing hardware and screen sizes, I think Nokia have made the right call there.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on with the news. Latest worldwide smartphone stats are out courtesy of Gartner this time. That's the data coming in as I speak. Gartner for quarter one, 2009. Nokia's market share in the smartphone world has fallen slightly to 41%, but as I commented in my news story, that's still more, 15 million devices in the quarter than the next four manufacturers in the table put together. So there's still a very healthy lead there. The 5800 in particular was pointed out as a success story. No surprises there. Behind Nokia in the stats were RAM, 20%, Apple, 11%, followed by a bunch of Windows Mobile manufacturers. In terms of smartphone OS, Symbian powered just under 50% of devices sold. I remember when it was 70%, but I think this is not so much Symbian losing their way as other operating systems, mobile systems, finding their way and coming back to be real competitors. Rafe, any comments?
Yes, I'd agree with that. It's really more about the fact that Symbian now has some competition to speak of. Although I would in particular highlight the performance of RIM, that's the BlackBerry devices, who I think really have surpassed their expectations in the last 18 months. Certainly, if you'd asked me a couple of years ago, I'd have been fairly pessimistic on RIM, but they're doing very well, and that looks set to continue. Obviously, it's also with the rise of the iPhone, Apple's in, I think it's 11% or so. And actually, it's more, if you want to look at the story about how those two operating systems have done particularly well versus perhaps some of the other incumbents. You know, Palm OS has disappeared altogether over the last 3 years. And Windows Mobile, you know, perhaps hasn't done as well as people were anticipating. I wouldn't write off anybody yet. And actually, I think the interesting thing is when we start getting into Q2 and Q3 of this year, we're going to start seeing some more of the effects of the economic downturn in terms of the performance of the manufacturers. Thus far, we've seen it in terms of their existing portfolios and what people are buying. But for example, you know, certainly Ericsson has been weak because it hasn't had the right things in the portfolio. And RIM hasn't sort of had any startling device announcements, although I understand there are some on the way. And it'll be interesting to see what the impact of things like the N97, perhaps the HTC Magic on the Android platform, and of course potentially new iPhones as well, although some of the talk is around those perhaps not being as much new in hardware terms. So we'll have to wait and see. I suspect that Nokia's actually going to probably be able to make a partial of a comeback with the strength of the 5800 and the N97 coming out, but have to wait and see.
Okay, also filed under not particularly surprising is the fact that if you look at the overall world mobile phone sales, they dipped year on year by 8% across the world in the first quarter of 2009 compared to smartphone sales, i.e. sales of devices with an open OS that you can add applications to. They increased by 12%, which is healthy for the smartphone market and a real backup of Symbian strategy and also things like Apple's strategy and Windows Mobile strategy. So,
yeah, and I was just going to say, I think the concern there is if you're looking at this comparatively, Nokia hasn't really experienced the same growth in its smartphones. Now, is that because it's had a weak touch portfolio? Now, that's obviously open to debate. But I think it is fair to say that Nokia has been underperforming in smartphones compared to the rest of the market. Although, again, is that sort of perhaps inevitable given the big lead it had? I think perhaps less so there. It should really be growing at the same rate, at least at the industry average rate. Clearly, there's going to be things like you know, Android around that I think was recently quoted as growing at 800% this year. Well, yes, it is going to grow at 800% if it's got a very small base to go off. But I think there is definitely cause for concern when Nokia is underplaying the overall industry average, because I think, if I'm right in saying, its smartphone numbers have declined slightly or been level, and they're sort of expecting a similar pattern in Q2, perhaps with a raise back in Q3. So again, we'll have to wait and see.
I think there is definitely an iPhone effect here, and I'll call it the iPhone effect. In terms of people perceiving smartphones to have these wonderful full screen adaptable displays, touch technology, and I think there's a definite trend across the industry from top end feature phones upwards, and people are looking for that in a smartphone, and things like the Nokia's N79, N85, N96, they all kind of got lost in the the post iPhone territory. They still sold in reasonable numbers, but there wasn't the same glitz and glamour to them that there would have been in an iPhone-less world. This is why the 5800, of course, has done so well.
Yeah. No, and I think you're right. I think touchscreens have sort of opened up the smartphone market to a segment which it hadn't otherwise reached. And, you know, devices like the iPhone, as you say, the 5800, yes, they're being bought by existing smartphone owners, but I think they're also being bought by people who are new to smartphones for the first time. And what will be interesting to see in the second half this year is how much Nokia can successfully implement their strategy of doing that at the opposite end, i.e. sort of, you know, the low end of the market where they want to push S60 down. The 5800 is a great example of how they've already done that. And they certainly want to continue that trend, both in non-touch and touch devices. And seeing cheaper touch devices come available on pay-as-you-go in the UK, for example, you know, that's obviously a trend I think we're going to see more of. So touch introducing smartphones, or I should really... Smartphones is a failed term now. I mean, open OS phone, shall we say.
Yeah, I have to say, even though the Nokia 5800 is trumpeted as being quite a cheap smartphone, and indeed it is, you can pick it up about 230, including VAT, in the UK. I can see with the commoditization of the technology, I can see a time in, say, a year's time when the 5800's successor will have roughly the same specs, roughly the same form and capabilities, but be something like £180, including VAT, maybe even lower. Really pushing into the mid-tier in a strong way.
Yeah, I'd go so far as to say I would expect the 5800 by this time next year to be at the £150 mark, and there to be several devices in that particular cluster.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. Okay, moving on with news. Moab phones were an area I know absolutely nothing about. These are FOMA phones over in Japan. Rafe, there's been some new ones announced. What are the highlights?
Yes, just very briefly, Moab is, of course, a version of Symbian used in Japan, which doesn't get much attention, partly because these phones aren't smartphones in the sense you can add programs to them, but they do use the Symbian OS and are actually quite sophisticated. And the latest batch out are, as usual, from Fujitsu and Sharp. And I think it's just worth mentioning that they're all running on wide VGA screens, so that's about 864x640. They have rotating screens. The cheapest two are waterproof. The high-end ones, I think, are running at 10 megapixels. They now do roaming internationally, so they actually work outside of Japan, which previously they didn't. And GPS, so Japan is continuing to have this cutting-edge technology with sort of the rotating screens and the form factors. And I just wanted to bring it up, really, because Moab, in terms of the Symbian Foundation, how that works is that, as you know, the Symbian Foundation will be made up of around 200 or so packages, and Moab will be what's termed an optional package or an operator package, which means it can be added on top of the Symbian Foundation OS to create, you know, the Moab interface in this particular case. And it's interesting because we may see that as a model for operators looking to differentiate on the software level going forward. And in one sense, you could say that Orange's container program is similar to that, albeit on a much smaller scale. So Moab, it's continuing to worth watching, despite the depression in phone sales in Japan because of the changes to subsidies as a result of legal requirements. You know, Symbian is still doing very well there, and that sort of looks set to continue, at least for the next few years. And beyond that, it's always hard to tell.
Okay. And finally, in the news section of this podcast, the Omni HD, now renamed, of course, simply the i8910, to avoid confusion with the simple Omnia, which is Windows Mobile powered.
Wow, that's catchy.
I know. And then people are also calling it the i8910 HD. This is just turning into a branding nightmare for Samsung. Anyway, so now available to buy on Orange, apparently. I have yet to hear from someone who's actually said, can I have one, and got one in box to their living room. But it is, in theory, available. Also, nearly available, the N97, of course, is now available officially to pre-order online from the Nokia online shop. It's £500. But I know a lot of people have got pre-orders in, and we'll let you know when they start arriving, of course. They should be arriving, Shay, all about Symbian fairly soon. There are a couple of parties and events where we're hoping to get some more news for you there. Okay, let's move on to a reader question, if I may. James Berlin, the good friend of All About Symbian, says, has there been a moment when you've seen some device or technology and thought, This changes everything. Now, I've got a thought on this, but Ewan's been very quiet, so let's go to Ewan first. Has there been a moment when you've seen this changes everything?
Yes, there has, amazingly enough. And it would be back, I'd have to check the year, but it would be the first time I went to an O'Reilly's Emerging Technology Conference in San Diego, which would be early 2001, 2002, I feel. And the sheer fact that everybody was using Wi-Fi. That this was long before we had Wi-Fi on phones. In fact, but I seem to remember is that as I went over, the phone that I took over was a 7650 and a certain portable PDA from a certain English manufacturer that's no longer there, which I shall not mention because I am absolutely broken, can't put anything in the silent swear box. Oh!
So near.
Hold on, here we go. I've got some here. There we go. Ching, ching, ching. Ching, ching, ching. There we go. Right. But the fact that everybody there was quite happily using Wi-Fi, you could go in and you could just bang. You could go on a network, you could connect, and you would be online. Now, back in those days, back when I were a lad, we didn't have no automatic connections in 3G or everything. We had twisted pair and DNS lookups and fixed IPs, and we were happy and thankful. But it was the fact that Wi-Fi, you could just go and switch on, and you were there. And the fact that the thing that most people got me was the fact that I could do that on my little 5MX with a little strapped-on compact flash Wi-Fi card using a custom operating system. Admittedly, it was a big, massive hack-together solution. But it was at that point that small device plus Wi-Fi gives you connectivity pretty much wherever you go. And, you know, I came back and said Wi-Fi needs to be on every single device it's made. Thankfully, we're at that point nowadays where even little £100 gaming consoles like the Nintendo DSi are picking up with Wi-Fi. The connected world, I think, deserves more to Wi-Fi than it did. You know, cellular connections proved it. Wi-Fi actually gave it wings.
Now, that's a good observation. Rafe, have you got a moment when you saw a device or technology and thought this changes everything?
It's a tricky question. There are several I can think of in technology in general.
Magic wands
elsewhere.
Don't count.
But I'll choose a couple, if I may, from the Symbian world. And I think seeing the N95 for the first time, you know, we talked about digital, you know, hardware convergence for so long with combining in camera, GPS, whatever. And the N95 is really, to my mind, the first device that made that really usable. It had its flaws, and especially in the early versions, but by the time the firmware had matured, it was an amazing device, and at the time there was nothing really to get near it. And now we take much of what was in it for granted in terms of, you know, GPS and camera functionality and the software as well. But back then it was sort of mind-blowing to, you know, people just didn't believe that it was possible to get all that into a single device. So I'd pick out that one. And then, you know, I wouldn't be able to do this without mentioning software and services, would I, you know? So I think I'll have to mention the Go Play event that Nokia had in London. I guess it's coming up for 2 years ago now. And that was when Ovi was first announced. And, you know, Nokia has been through a number of transitions in its history, but Ovi was sort of the first sign that it was about to do it again. And the big push into software and services, which there's still much, much left to be seen, you know, how successful that's going to be, a lot of ifs and buts. But, you know, that was sort of a vision of, you know, I've been focusing so much on hardware to that point. You sort of go, actually, it's not really about hardware anymore. It's about software and the way you could see, you know, this digital world, which, you know, as a geek was so in love with, how it could actually have more application into connecting into the real world, the physical world, and what that could do in terms of changing the way society thinks and communicates and connects with each other. It's something that I really got for the first time at that event. There'd always been the signs of it before, but, you know, it's hard to pick out one moment. So I think those are my two.
Yeah, thanks, Rafe. I have to say, you've stolen my thunder rather. I was going to pick the N95. The moment I had the realization when this thing had a GPS in as well. I'd already just become accustomed to the 5 megapixel or a high-res camera in the N93. This took it to 5 megapixels at the same VGA video recording, and I could ditch my Bluetooth GPS. So in the one device, for the very first time, I had everything I needed in terms of personal electronics. No other gadgets needed. No camcorder, no camera, no GPS, no music player. Everything was in my phone. But to go back a few years and to be more unique, because you mentioned the N95, going back to about 2001, 2002, when I saw the Nokia 9210 for the first time, the very first Nokia communicator that ran on the Symbian OS, and going to that from a Scion Series 5, which by that time had been rather obsoleted, and the screen on that looks so dark and dingy compared to this glorious all-in-one device that had a phone and my Scion effectively with a glorious color screen, full VGA width. It just blew me away. There were some software issues at the time, and not all the functionality from the Scion came across, which is a bit of a disappointment, but that was still my next device, and that was just a really stunning moment when I opened that and I saw all that functionality in that one box.
Steve, hands in your pockets, please.
So just to put a slight twist on the question, Ewan and Steve, I mean, what do you think is going to be the next technology or thing that makes you go, this is going to change everything?
I'm going to say flat rate worldwide data with no bill shock. At the moment, you still have, you still have to pay per call, per text. You have a certain amount of paper data. When somebody comes along and goes, here's your phone, it's 50 quid a month, as many calls as you like, as many data as you like, to wherever you like, to for however long you like, and we have, it's an almost universal, that's how much you pay to be connected, in the same way that you pay a flat rate for water, for example, in many places. And it's just, there you go, you pay, you've got your washer. I think once we see that sort of ubiquity of data and the ability for people to stay connected wherever they are, you know, using 3G, not worrying about, you know, I had to switch off my data connection in Russia because otherwise people would drop a bucket on me. And because I just, you know, the cost at £3 a megabyte is ridiculous. Whereas if I was in Russia with a Russian contract, it would be far, far less than that. Once we can flatten off the charges and make it as you know what you're going to pay, there will be a sudden acceleration in the same way that the internet had a sudden acceleration when we went from pay per minute to pay per month.
Yeah, no, I think that's a very good one. Steve, have you got one?
I would simply say that when a manufacturer, naming no names, produces a device which has all the bits that all of us are crying out for, which sounds like an impossible nirvana, something that pleases everybody, but there are such obvious features which are missed on every single device. For example, you know, the iPhone 3G missed having a reasonable camera. The Nokia 5800 misses having any kind of decent graphics that you could run games on. This every device from every manufacturer seems to miss something crucial. And at some point, somebody, Nokia, Apple, Samsung, whoever, HTC, will produce a device which for the first time has everything that certainly the power users around the world have been crying out for. And at that point, I'll be happy and I will sit down amazed.
Well, I think Steve's the optimist among us, and the one perfect device, I'm not sure that will ever happen. There'll always be something else that I want, and whether one form factor can suit everyone, which I'm going to plug Steve's article on the site this week about the perfect form factor, which is well worth a read, and obviously has generated a lot of discussion. So to answer my own question, I'm inclined to think that the next really revolutionary thing I expect to see is some kind of... I hesitate to use the word AI because that really gives the wrong idea, but a bit more intelligence in the software so that it starts presenting things to you rather than you having to tell it what you want to do. The idea that your device may actually have an idea based on maybe the context of where you are or what you're doing, what you want to do next, thereby saving you steps and improving the user experience. Rather than making a decision to do something, the device should be sort of the enabler to make you do, you know, that lets you do something. And it's kind of waffly and hard to get, but that's, you know, the idea is that, you know, your device becomes less of a tool and more of a companion, if you like. So that's the thing I'm sort of looking for. I mean, I'm sure there's some more hardware stuff to come, and what I'm talking about is a lot further off, I think. And, you know, what Ewan mentioned about unlimited data, I'd wholeheartedly agree with, and I still think there's room for hardware improvement. You know, NFC is going to be the next thing. I think that'll be pretty cool once it becomes ubiquitous. And actually, that's probably the word, you know, ubiquity of a lot of these things actually is the point at which they then start changing the world and the way we interact with devices and with each other. So great question from James there. So I better let Steve get on with the rest of this podcast.
Just before we do, though, what you were saying there, Rafe, is it actually sounds very close to Nokia's David Wood. I'm just going back to a previous interview I did. Here we are. People should not be confronted by the complexity of device. They should be thinking, this is doing terribly complicated things. It might fall over. Young children take years to learn to walk before it becomes second nature, and it happens as if it was easy. Software should act in the same way as a smart nervous system and not spill through to the awareness of the user, which I think ties in with what you were saying perfectly.
Yes, no, absolutely. I'd agree with that. And it is something of a, you know, the holy grail of user experience, I guess. But, you know, I'm hopeful that that may happen in the not too long in the future. So, but we'll have to wait and see.
Okay. One final item before we all shuffle off. Rafe, you were out yesterday on a big trip to London. I have no idea where you went, but is it possible to summarise in 2 or 3 minutes what you saw and what you brought away?
Me summarise in 2 or 3 minutes? That's asking a lot, Steve.
London, no problem.
So I went to London and I went up the BT Tower, and the reason for this was that BT and 3 were launching a campaign called terminatetherate.org, and there's information on the website which you can get in more detail, which I can't do in 2 minutes. But the basics of it is that in the UK, mobile calls have a termination charge that BT pays to the operators when you make a call from a landline to a mobile. It also works from mobile to mobile, but that's less relevant here. So that's effectively why mobile calls cost more than landlines. Originally, it was intended as a subsidy for operators to help pay for their network, and they were saying the terminate rate it's due for renewal in 2011. Let's persuade Ofcom to reduce this termination rate to below a penny, so we'll have cheap calls and we can have unlimited everything packages. It was a nice bit of outreach to consumers, and it's true that it could possibly result in lower cost mobile calls, which I think everyone would like to see. However, I mean, I think the issue is perhaps more complicated than they were presenting. As I said, the reason it was there in the first place was a subsidy to enable mobile networks to be big. And it's true, it does cost more for a mobile call to get made. They were saying it's about actually a fifth of the termination rate, so it's actually only a penny. So the termination rate is an artificial floor. However, there's still a lot of investment that needs to go in networks, particularly with regards to data bandwidth increasing, and we look at things like LTE further into the future. And the other thing to bear in mind is that it's also really a regulatory issue, and that BT and 3 are the ones that would benefit from most from this, and the other four big incumbent telcos would actually suffer if this changed. Now, I'm not an expert on regulatory environments, and clearly there's vested interests all over the place, but you know, you have to, in a regulatory environment, do what's best for the consumer, and that's not necessarily cutting the termination rate, because that could have a knock-on effect elsewhere, perhaps an increased line rentals, because the money has to come from somewhere. But there is more information on terminatetherate.org, although that is obviously the message coming from people behind this campaign, so, you know, take it with the suitable amount of scepticism, I would say, as you would from any other source that's trying to get you to sign a petition. But yeah, potentially very interesting, and I can say that was a pretty amazing view from the top of the BT Tower in London. So there you go, quick summary.
There you go. What you can't do, though, is tell us where the GPO Tower is, because it's actually a British state secret and covered by the Official Secrets Act.
You always come up with a fascinating fact that almost leaves me speechless, Ewan.
Yep,
but I've got another fascinating.
Tell anybody where it is. Go on, Ed.
I have got a fascinating fact, courtesy of the Really Mobile team, who I ran into yesterday. And if you haven't already checked them out, go to the reallymobileproject.com. It's great
Let
stuff.
Let me guess, James Watley is really an AI.
No, it was courtesy of Dan Lane, actually, which I think he was channeling Ben Smith when he told me that the lifts in the BT Tower are the only ones that you're legally allowed to use when there's a fire, and it's a local bylaw. And the reason for all this is because apparently the lifts are very quick, and so it's not dangerous because they operate at 1,400 feet per second in terms of moving up and down. But I wasn't entirely convinced by this, because I would have thought fast-moving lifts isn't necessarily what you want to be in a fire, but far be it from me to say. But still, fascinating facts, as the Really Mobile team would say, so great stuff.
Steve, do you have a fascinating fact?
I have a fascinating fact in response to Rafe's longing for this nirvana, where a device or a service suggests what to do next as you carry it around. It reminds you of upcoming activities. It provides appropriate entertainment. It manages your life. We're there. We're there.
Yeah, it's called a wife.
Yeah. Oh, you stole my punchline. Oh, darn it. Darn it, you're good.
Well, I'm still working on that particular property. There's plenty of pressure coming from, some people who seem to like the idea of grandchildren. So
Yeah, so let's just draw a veil under that.
I was going to say, hold on, you're drawing a veil under the fact that you're looking for a property as a wife. Okay, right.
Thank you so much.
Any responses and proposals of marriage to Rafe, please bombard his Twitter account, which is Rafe Blandford. My Twitter account, Steve Litchfield. There's also Ewan Spence. One item of news items we didn't get through, and Rafe wanted to talk about the new Ovi Maps API, so we'll definitely make sure we cover that in the next Insight. I don't think there's any great hurry. The application developers are still hard at work on that one, and there's lots more scope for movement in that area. So from now, it's goodbye from me, Steve Litchfield.
Goodbye from me, Rafe Blandford.
And das vidanya, Hasa, Ivan Spencer. Yeah, Rotsky.
Oh, go back to Russia.
That's just offended all our Russian listeners.
Norway.
I'm sorry,
it's
guys.
Norway next year, guys.
Oh, no. You and channeling a Viking, that's quite a scary thought.
I think it's time to fade things out, Rafe.